Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you peace and prosperity. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man. That's Proverbs chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. Good morning, everybody. It is 4 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with me this morning. Rob Bluey is going to be with us in just a few minutes. I am fresh from the dentist yesterday. Of course, I haven't been in about 16 months, so... Yeah, I didn't want to lie to the dentist when he asked you that question. Have you been flossing? So in order to avoid that lie, I condensed 16 months of flossing into 6 minutes. So that way, no lying. I'm sure he could tell by my inflamed gums that I was a little... aggressive with the floss. But anyway, get to the dentist if you haven't been in a while. Very important. I guess that's kind of a good indicator of your overall general health is because there's so much bacteria in your mouth. You got to be careful. I got to get my friend Paul on. He's a dentist. I still want to talk to him. I want to find out, you know, dentistry changes so much. So I'm going to, Rebecca, put Paul on the list. Let's give him a call. There's thumbs up. All right. We're going to take a little break when we come back. Rob Bluey, he matriculated at Ithaca College. How about that, Rebecca? You got to be pleased with that. Kind of throw that out there.
Is that the word of the day right off the bat?
Matriculated.
That's a good one.
Yes, at Ithaca College. So anyway, he will be with us in just a minute at 6 minutes after the hour. Glad you're with us. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Tuesdays with Rob Bluey always makes me so very happy. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
Thank you so much. Just to get things started, does the average person get up, eat a brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tart, go to work, and then even remotely care about the collusion debate?
Probably not, but you and I end up talking about it at least once a week.
I know, but I'm just so exhausted.
Please, it is truly amazing that we're still having this conversation how many months now after the 2016 presidential election. We'll probably continue to have it up until the 2020 presidential election. But the latest news coming out of Washington is the House Intelligence Committee, the Republicans on that committee, after spending 14 months investigating, have determined that there was no collusion. Mm. Of course, the Democrats aren't satisfied with this answer, so I expect this to drag on yet again in perpetuity.
Please make it stop.
I'll do my best.
I was reading today in history, Rob. In 1868, President Andrew Johnson's impeachment trial began in the U.S. Senate. Is that over yet?
I think that one is, but you better believe that if the Democrats take control of the Senate or the House of Representatives in November, there are going to be Democrats demanding President Trump face impeachment charges. And, you know, Bill, we'll get a good indication of perhaps where the political landscape is today. It's always difficult to determine if a special election is a bellwether for what's to come months later. But there is a big race happening today in the Western Pennsylvania, and all eyes on it because it's a seat that Republicans should hold. President Trump won the district by 20 points, but a Democrat is really running strong there, in part because of the left's opposition to the president.
Mm-hmm. All right, Rob, the president is heading to California. Of all the presidents, it's taken him the longest to get there. I'm just curious, $250,000 a plate for lunch, does that include gratuity?
Well, you know, that's how political fundraisers work. It does cost a lot of money, but it starts early. Look, let's face it. The president basically kicked off his reelection campaign last week with unveiling of his new slogan for 2020 when he was campaigning for that Western Pennsylvania seat. So he will be in California, his first visit to state, which, you know, he's not going to compete. There's no chance that a Republican, probably in our lifetime, Bill, will ever win California statewide.
True.
Again after, you know, a state that Ronald Reagan came from. You know, it's a situation where the president has made immigration a top issue, and California is really one of the epicenters of that fight.
All right, let's go into the lightning round now, Rob. Who's going to greet him on the tarmac?
Good question. I have not seen that. Are you quizzing me?
This is just a guess. Don't say Dennis Rodman. I don't know. Who's going to be there?
Certainly, probably not the governor,
okay.
Jerry Brown, who is a strong liberal.
You know,
it's one of those things where I bet that it'll be there are still a small number, but it's still some Republicans in California. They're not going to be able to mount a challenge, it seems, to the senator there who's up for re-election, Dianne Feinstein. It'll be a battle between her and somebody to the left. And California has this interesting or weird, I don't really like it, system where there might not be a Republican on the ballot because of the way that that their electoral system works. So there are so many Democrats, and they tend to dominate politics there, that in a lot of these elections you have two Democrats facing each other for the general election. Like I say, I'm not really a huge fan of that, but mm-hmm. That's what we have in California today.
Rob, how intense will the protest be against the president?
Oh, I think very strong. I mean, this is something that that they're gearing up for this demonstration. They want to send a clear message that President Trump is not welcome. And I think specifically when it comes to his visit to the border wall prototypes, of course, he continues to talk about the border wall. That remains a promise that he made and a promise that, you know, he wants to fulfill. And so he's going to go see these prototypes and evaluate them. And I expect that's going to generate quite a bit of protest and activity on the part of liberals.
All right. The immigration policy is a big hot topic in California. Will he have any time to be addressing that? Will he be asked to address that, do you think?
Yes, I do think so. I mean, I think the California trip serves a few purposes. Obviously, immigration being first and foremost, he wants to put that back on the radar. He wants to make sure that he's following through on his commitments. I think you already mentioned the other. Obviously, there's a fundraising component.
Mm-hmm.
But I think third, I mean, the presidents like to visit all of the states. Let's face it. I mean, whether they won or lost the state in the Electoral College, it's important that the president interact with the people of the state, and this is a president who's, you know, regularly criticized as you know, getting his new information from television and not having enough interaction with the American people. So I think it's a great opportunity for him to get out of Washington and see real Americans at work and what they're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Rob, I heard that California wants to become a sanctuary state instead of sanctuary cities. I heard Laura Ingraham say that they should be called fugitive cities, not sanctuary cities.
Yeah, so this is a big dispute. This is an area where President Trump's Justice Department, under Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, has challenged the state of California, suing them, because they are defying what the federal government considers to be, you know, enforcing the law. That is cooperating with federal officials to turn over illegal immigrants whom they might come in contact with. I mean, it's so bad that in the city of Oakland, California, in the Bay Area, you have a situation where the mayor has openly been defiant and has talked about, you know, going to jail to protect those illegal immigrants who reside in her city. Kate Steinle, who was the woman who was murdered by an illegal immigrant, you know, put this issue on the map in California, and you would have thought that may have changed some hearts and minds in the state. But it appears that, you know, here years later, we're still having this fight, and California seems more resistant than ever to cooperating.
Mm-hmm. Rob, there's still a fair amount of Democrats obstructing President Trump's vacancies on the courts. What's the latest with that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is a challenge almost on a daily basis in the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. I see that they only have one nominee who's teed up for a vote this week, and that's not even a judicial nominee. That's just another political appointee. President Trump now has more judicial vacancies to fill today than when he took office. I mean, this is how bad the situation has become, with the Democrats just resisting his ability to do so, despite the fact that he has made some significant progress on the appellate court level. He appointed and had confirmed a record number of appellate court judges, and that's significant because that's where most of the cases end up in the appeals court. They don't actually, a lot of them don't make it to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I saw Hillary was in India complaining about the election. It seems that she's at least outsourcing her complaining.
That's true. Well, Hillary Clinton, it seems, whether it's selling books or trying to make news to keep herself in the news, always manages to find a way to bring it back to this. So, but look, I don't expect it to ever go away. I mean, there's always going to be complaints on the part of Democrats who feel that the election was unfairly won. I think that's where we go back to where we started this conversation with Russia, and that's why it continues to be one of those issues that on a daily basis. Look, let's face it, the president does it himself. I mean, he was one of the first to tweet last night about the conclusions of the House Intelligence Committee, finding no collusion. So he, I think, has this on his mind as well. And he thinks it's a challenge to his legitimacy as president. The Democrats would like to imply, and Hillary Clinton by extension, that he didn't win it fair and square.
We even started before that, Rob, where I said you matriculated at Ithaca College. Now, I know when I come back, I want to ask you what it was like for you to be a conservative at such a liberal college. It's 16 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Rob Bluey, editor of the Daily Signal. Be back in a minute. It is 18 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Rob Bluey, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Rob, what was it like being a conservative at such a liberal college?
Well, it was a pretty lonely experience, Bill, but there were a handful of us around. You know, I have to say, I was really blessed I was the editor-in-chief of the student newspaper, and it seemed like there was a conservative contingent. This was not a conservative paper. This was the main paper on campus.
Wow.
There was a conservative group of us who were serving at the time, so I at least had that outlet to have some people with some like-minded thoughts. But I actually think that I often tell young people this today, that I think that in many cases, being challenged almost on a daily basis, whether it was in class, a politics class, obviously you talk about ideas and ideologies, or just in general being a part of a campus community like that, it actually helped me think more critically about the issues, the policy debates that were taking place at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in today's environment, it was certainly not nearly like what we have today, where many students don't feel they even have the opportunity to speak out and share their point of view, and they're silenced because there's a certain fear or a lack of tolerance of conservative beliefs on college campuses. So I feel, I was pretty fortunate not to have that, and people at least willing to entertain my ideas and have a conversation.
Yeah. Well, speaking of young people, boy, nice segue, Bill. Let's talk about millennials. They're not that liberal on gun control, are they? They're not.
It's one of those things where you've had a situation here in the wake of the terrible tragedy in Parkland, where there have been a number of students at that high school,
mm-hmm,
who've spoken out. I was reading a story last night, Bill, where Emma Gonzalez has 1.2 million Twitter followers.
Wow.
A lot of the students have several hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers. I mean, here are you and I are struggling to get people to pay attention, and here are these kids in high school who have created such a strong platform, and a lot of them are espousing views of strong gun control measures, if not ban guns outright entirely. But when you actually step back and look at the numbers and some of the polling, it suggests that, yes, millennials are in many ways no more inclined to abandon the Second Amendment and support the law-abiding citizens' right to bear arms.
Robin, we start looking at the measures that are going to be taken to try to protect schools more. I think there was a number that I heard of, it was a really big number. All I can think about is in the state of Minnesota, the governor is suggesting $21 million to improve school safety. And I think the number I heard nationally was, I don't know, was it 250 million or something? But anyway, it was a huge number. In these cash-strapped school districts, is this the best way to spend money?
Yeah, it's one of those things where you hear so often about how schools are just struggling to get by, and then when you have to add all of these security measures on top of it, you just wonder how they'll go about doing it. I will say, Bill, this is one area where I think Congress has tried to address. So there's a couple of pieces of legislation, one in the House by Congressman Rutherford, another one in the Senate from Senator Hatch, which would attempt to take some grant money and make it available for states and these school districts to figure out how to address some of these challenges. I think they're going to need to be innovative, creative in how they do it. We've reported at the Daily Signal about some examples both in Utah and Ohio, how long before Parkland they had started to take measures where, in some cases maybe they were arming teachers or other school staff, like the situation that I read about in Ohio, where there are certain locks in the school safes where a handgun is stored, and there are certain teachers who have been trained how to use it. And in the event of a situation, they'll know how to react and respond, and they won't be in what President Trump has described as these gun-free zones that don't give anybody who is trying to protect themselves an opportunity to do so.
Rob, we have a couple minutes left, and I would love to spend the rest of our time about will taxpayers, are they going to bail out Obamacare and the insurance companies? Where is that headed?
Well, if things are headed the way that they appear to be, yes. It's unfortunate that we've reached the point that we have, but I think that there are some strong forces at play, both within the Trump administration believe that long-term this is a good solution, and I think you have some Republicans who are fearing what some of the electoral consequences could be if consumers and their constituents see an increase right before the November election. So you do have a situation where there is a must-pass bill coming to the floor. Yes, Bill, again, I feel like this is Groundhog Day because we go through this, every several weeks. Mm-hmm. But this probably is the last one to leave the station this year because it's going to be what they call an omnibus bill, and they're going to attach all sorts of things to it, and they could include these Obamacare bailouts money, which, again, how well, you're left scratching your head, did we have a Republican Congress that came in wanting to repeal the law?
I know.
And you're talking about the same Congress doing a bailout.
I know. It's crazy, Rob. All right, round two of the tax cuts, what would that involve?
Yeah, so there are a number of things that weren't accomplished in the first round, and there are always special interests at work in Washington D.C. That are trying to get carve out. So I think one of the things that they could tackle in round two is trying to eliminate these provisions where the federal government picks winners and losers. Conservatives have always said, let the market decide. Mm-hmm. Government should not be involved in this. And there are a lot of companies and industries that still were able to have their carve-outs in the bill. So I think that the more we get to a flatter, fairer tax system, the better off all Americans are, and we'll be in a situation where the government isn't rewarding some and penalizing others.
Mm-hmm. How excited are you at the prospect of President Trump meeting with Kim Jong-un?
Oh, I think it's a positive development, but it's one of those situations where we know that where Kim Jong-un loves the attention,
mm-hmm.
as President Trump. So I hope it's not just a photo op and a show, but I hope that there's real dialogue and conversation. We get to a point where North Korea does agree to give up its nuclear weapons. There obviously will be a cost to doing that. They're not just going to go in without expecting the United States to do something in return. But anytime the two sides are talking, I think it's better than certainly this posturing we've seen in the past.
Mm-hmm. Rob, it was on this day that Susan B. Anthony died. She was 86. That particular form of currency really never caught on. Did you ever buy anything with a Susan B. Anthony dollar?
I don't think I did, but I'm pretty sure that my father has one and collected some money. So,
yeah,
it's one of those things where here we are celebrating Women's History Month, and obviously she was a pioneer like so many others. And we're very fortunate now at the Heritage Foundation to have a great female leader in Kay Coles James, and we're excited about the path forward and the direction she's leading us.
Yeah. And all of these articles that we discuss are on thedailysignal.com. There are a lot of great reading that you can go do, and you can go see Rob's picture, and you can find out more about what he does and how well he does it. Because, Rob, you're just a delight. I love having you on the show.
It's great to be with you, Bill.
Thanks, Rob. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Yep. It is 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back with more.
Hi, I'm Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. During this Lenten season prior to Easter, many Christians take specific time to take an introspective look at their lives. And while I think any time is a good time to do that, it is certainly on our minds this month. Faith Radio exists to invite everyone to the table of faith by placing their faith and trust in Jesus Christ and to call His followers into a deeper walk with the One who saved us. Your prayers and support of Faith Radio keep the message of hope alive because He truly does live.
What if I told you about an email you might actually want to read? It features the best of Faith Radio's newest shows and blog contributions and helps you discover opportunities to put your faith into action, digging deeper into Faith Radio's ministry spotlight. It's Faith Radio's email newsletter, and you can sign up for yours at myfaithradio.com. Look for subscribe for the Faith Radio newsletter.
Good morning. It is kind of jet lag Tuesday because we're still trying to get adjusted to daylight savings time. I should just speak for myself. Anyway, coming up soon, Dr. Rosemary Stein is going to be with us. Every day I have to look up words in the dictionary. What is juuling? What is it and why are kids doing it? Juuling. Anyway, we'll find out in just about 8 minutes.
NASCAR racing is a national phenomenon. Fans will tell you that there's a scary fascination that takes place inside them when they see a car spin out of control. These spectators watch helplessly as the car slams against the wall, rolls over and over, bursting into pieces and occasionally into flames. Sometimes the driver emerges miraculously unscathed. Other times they're seriously injured or every so often tragically killed. Sometimes our lives are like that car, spinning out of control, heading towards disaster. We feel overwhelmed, scared, hopeless, and wonder if we'll survive. If you're feeling that way right now, there's someone who can help. Jesus Christ came to this earth to show you His love and forgiveness. He died on the cross and rose from the dead in order to pay the penalty for all the things that you and I have done wrong. Call 888-NEED-HIM or chat with us online at chataboutjesus.com.
Did you miss one of your favorite shows this week? Wish you could listen to that sermon again and again? Jump in the car partway through an interview that you wish you'd heard all of? Is there a show or an interview you heard that you would like to pass along to a friend? Download or share our free show podcasts at myfaithradio.com and listen anywhere, anytime. That's myfaithradio.com.
It is 25 minutes until the top of the hour. We should always love the Lord our God with the decisions we make. The choices we make every day will have an impact on our relationship with God. Author and founder of Daily Audio Bible, Brian Harden, says more.
You can't call something a relationship that's not a relationship, that's not life-giving to both people. And so our choices and the ripple effect of our choices do matter. And even if we would acknowledge that our choices matter, we rarely understand that they affect the one who loves us. We would know that very clearly in our own lives. If we turn to some sort of addiction or whatever, it may destroy the relationships in our lives because it would have such a profound effect on our families. But it has the same effect on God. He's that invested in the relationship. In fact, He's more invested in the relationship than any other person could possibly be. Not just because He created us, but because He's willing to die for this relationship.
That was Brian Harden. If you want to hear that full interview, go to myfaithradio.com. Type in Brian Harden, H-A-R-D-I-N. I am in the waiting room. The doctor is in the house. We'll get those two together in just a minute. What is it that dictates what you will and won't do? This is Jim Garlow. So what is the motivational force for you to do what's right? Is it out of pleasing others, getting ahead, or just plain old peer pressure? Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13:11, when I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put childish things behind me. So what do we do with that? Again, Paul gives his instruction in 1 Corinthians 14:20 when he says, stop thinking like children. In regard to evil, be infants, but in your thinking, be adults. So what is the motivational force for you to do what's right? Maturity in Christ in your walk with the Lord is evident when the inside of you starts dictating what you do and what you don't do. There's more to discover at jimgarlow.com. Live out your faith.
Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way.
22 minutes until the top of the hour. I have on our studio line Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Good morning, Dr. Rose.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Every time I wake up, I always have to have my dictionary close by because I'm finding new words that I don't know what they mean. And the new word that I don't know is juuling. Would you help me with that one?
Well, you made me study what juuling was, and I had to ask Hannah because I have a teenager in the house.
All right.
So she was familiar with juuling also because she's in college, and she says they're popping these things onto their computers and then they're sucking on them.
Whoa.
It's a new nicotine rush, device that is, I guess it's powered by the computer or in the electronic system.
Okay.
But the device allows you to take a hit of nicotine.
Okay.
And the hit of nicotine is so large that, I'm trying to remember, but it's almost like inhaling half a pack or a pack of cigarettes. And I'm sure that I'm getting this wrong, but Hannah was letting me know. And it's like the rush is so much and so fast that you get these huge headaches from it if you're not used to it.
Okay.
And hopefully you're not used to it.
So it's almost like a fruit-flavored e-cigarette, isn't it? I think there's some fruit flavors mixed into these hits.
And so it actually tastes good.
Uh-huh.
when you inhale this, and it almost is like you're drinking something.
Mm-hmm.
But you're actually just sort. I guess you're sucking on the air, and
okay.
the air tastes like something.
Okay. Oh, it just sounds horrible, absolutely horrible. Which leads me to my next question and conversation with you is depression in teens. This has got to be related.
Well. I guess like kids are finding or looking for so many things to give them the highs that they need from day to day, and they're not finding them. Right? Whether it's a juuling or the brand new tattoo or that they get, drinking, partying, texting, these poor kids, they're just going from thing to thing, and it's not different in the sense of that kids are looking for something, but it's different in what they're finding. And it's also different in that they don't have relationships to keep them from doing things that are very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And the better kids, when they don't find what they're looking for, will get very depressed, will find that they're despondent, that they don't have a reason to live, and they get really thrown into a very deep, dark depression. And you see it in our kids today because they don't find a reason to live. And it's as parents, we're not instilling into them what we need to be so that they understand how unique and wonderful they are in our view, but also in God's view. And it's a very dangerous thing that we're bringing up people that don't have a core.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rose, I saw a Marine speaking, a Marine officer speaking on TV last week, and he said that only 3% or 30% of eligible teens, young adults, would even make it through basic training. So in other words, I remember a pastor of mine saying when he has someone come into his office and they talk about their depression, he said, usually my default is to ask them three questions. What is your diet like? Are you getting good sleep? And do you exercise? Keep it pretty simple.
And I fear that he's not going to get a good answer about 95% of the time.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, or maybe even fortunately for our armed forces, our kids are not even cognizant enough to figure out, okay, these are the things that I should say about myself, and these are not the things that I should say. So they start, you know, just talking on and saying things that are quite inappropriate. But it's a good thing that the officer gets a pretty good idea about who he should be admitting and not. But on the other hand, our kids are really immature at the age of 18, 19, and 20. And so they're going to act like 12-year-olds. It's not going to be very hard for that officer to realize which people are just not going to be good candidates.
And Dr. Rose, it looks like technology is turning some younger people into getting and having kind of bad posture and hunched over, you know, neck pain and all kinds of stuff from just hunching over their device all day.
Well, and I see it at the clinic all the time. And I think part of it is that as adults, we don't want to nag to our kids and say, sit up straight. But that's one of the things that as a mom and as a dad, we're allowed to do. And that phone posture is a very dangerous one.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to use your phone, make sure that you sit up straight and you don't bend your neck. Because that will have its repercussions in the long run. The other things that it does, I mean, and I always talk to my patients about it on a daily basis, but I tell them it's going to affect your brain and it's going to affect your eyes. There's no way around it. When your eyes have to squint all the time to adjust itself to the letters and the color on the screen, it's going to have a repercussion in the long run. And so we don't know exactly when these kids are 30 and 40 what's going to happen. But there was, you know, in that story, there was a young man who's 30 who has been on a phone for, you know, the last 10, 15 years. And you could see that his body has taken a toll on his body.
Mm-hmm.
This will have an effect on our kids' brains, eyes, and body unless we intervene and we tell our kids, you know, 1 hour of phone time is enough. You should see the looks on the kids' faces when I tell them screen time should be limited to an hour.
Mm. I bet you're not very popular.
No, I try to say it with a smile, and, mm-hmm. and so they love me anyway, but that's not one of my more popular comments.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't a question for younger people today to say, how are you presenting yourself to the world? I mean, you talk about sitting up straight. Well, isn't that important just to learn? If you go into an office to sit down for a job interview, you should probably assume a position you don't normally assume, which is sitting up straight.
And unfortunately, we're not bringing up kids that think about that. They're thinking about this moment in time. They're not thinking about the future and how what they're doing today affects that future at all. And that's one thing that really rests on the shoulders of us as parents. That we should be constantly telling them, you know, there is a very vast, long future in front of your life, and the things that you do, whether you're hunching over and you're going to look like that, and that's going to affect your health, or you're drinking lots of soda, and that's going to affect your blood sugar, and maybe lead to diabetes, maybe a tattoo that you've chosen that would not be appropriate to a job interview that you're going to do. All these things need to be presented to our children. They may make a face and look like they're not listening or like you're really old-fashioned. But you know what? It sinks in, and you love that kid more than anybody else in the world at that point. And so just continue to do it. Continue to do it in love and in patience and in kindness, and it will make its mark.
Mm-hmm.
Don't lose faith, parents.
Amen, Dr. Rose. Let me take a break. When we come back, I want to discuss violence and video games. I remember when I was a kid, violence on TV was Captain Kangaroo getting ping pong balls dropped on his head. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. It's 11 minutes until the top of the hour. A little happy violin by Stefan Grappelli. I'm speaking to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Dr. Rose, let's talk a little bit about video games. These have become incredibly violent and realistic. And we're seeing things like what's being played out in Parkland and other shootings, maybe a little inspired by some of these video games.
I agree, and I think that a lot of the video games are obviously dehumanizing humans, and they're calling them other things, maybe zombies, maybe, you know, the enemy, so that you don't consider that a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different when you're an adult and when you're a child, because you process things differently, and also as an adult, you're able to separate yourself from the screen and the actions that are on TV. And that's what makes it so scary for kids to be partaking of these games that early, is because they cannot differentiate many times what's going on the screen, what's going on in real life. And when the anger is triggered, he's going to react, that child is going to react in the way that he reacts when he's playing on, you know, on his electronic device. I agree that this is a very dangerous trend, and we should be looking into what do we do to curtail it. I thought that the analogy of saying that conservatives and Christians that want to make those games against the law are sort of two-faced.
Mm-hmm.
because of the gun argument. I don't think those two things can really be made, because guns and playing realistic shooting games on an electronic device and owning, you know, owning a gun so that you can defend yourself, your family, or you can, you know, you can get food for your family if you're hunting. I don't exactly see the collaterals in that, but I can see where, you know, just outlawing one more thing, kids are going to get these things, and they're going to have access to them. But it's a sense of telling the kids, this is not a good idea. I don't like you playing these games. I don't want them in my home. Outlawing them and making them against the law is not the answer. It's more the parental authority and saying, I don't want them in my house. You know, if somebody else plays them, that's up to them. But I prefer you not to play them.
Mm-hmm.
And if we exert our parental authority more, I think that we're not going to be in quite a bind. But it's a firm and kind parental authority that I would recommend for us as parents to have.
And Dr. Rose, a majority of American households have a gamer in the house, but ironically, the average age for the male gamers is about 35, and for women it's 44. So we can pick on kids in gaming, but a lot of adults are gamers themselves, and I don't even know how that translates into everyday aggression and anger and how that affects adults.
Well, and the thing is how it affects kids, because if you have a gaming dad at 35 to 45, or you have a gaming mom that's 45, that's a distracted parent who's maybe spending, you know, and you know, it might be relaxing for them, and it might be a way to get the stress out or whatever, but that's a parent that's not going to be engaged in asking the kid, so how'd it go at school, you know, what's going on, can we talk about something, how are your grades? And even if they do, it's going to be one eye on the screen and one eye talking to your kid. That's what I'm seeing, that the kids are being largely ignored, and they're growing up just like the Cruise boy.
Mm-hmm.
They have no heart because we're not instilling a heart into them. So each parent out there, if that's you, take the eyes off the screen and put your eyes on your kid and give them the attention that they need.
Yeah, good point. I have never played a video game in my life.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's good or anything. It just has never appealed to me, and I've never actually picked up one of those little gaming devices and, you know, even at a friend's house to say, well, what is this, and let me try it. I am not even interested. So I don't even know what they're like, but I know they're highly addictive.
Yeah, and I can see that because I hear the kids want to play. Once they get very aggressive in the room, mm-hmm. when I say let's decrease or take away game time, they visibly get very upset. So I don't doubt that it is addictive.
And Dr. Rose, do you have a Saving America One Child at a Time story for us?
Well, of course I do.
I know you do.
So a couple of months ago, I had this lovely young lady, and she came in with her mom, who was very visibly upset. And she was having huge anger problems. And she was throwing things, so much so that she was throwing things in the classroom. She was being very aggressive. She was bullying other kids in the school. She was being very impatient and unkind, even with her teacher. And so when mom brought her in, it was because she had been suspended indefinitely from school, and they were suggesting homeschooling, but mom didn't have the means to be able to homeschool her daughter. So she said, what am I supposed to do with this? And so we sat down and we talked about certain things. And I said, you know, when a kid is angry, that is a very strong emotion. And in the Bible, it says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. But it also alludes to that anger is not a bad emotion by itself. It's just that the anger can turn to bitterness if we don't channel that emotion into something good. I said, I bet you that she has a very strong feeling of justice. And that when she is angry like that, she's feeling that somebody is doing an injustice to her or to somebody else, and she doesn't know how to handle it, so she goes into these fits of rage. Mm. Why don't we make sure that we're using that anger in a good way, and we're making her exercise, we're making her do things, not just taking her mind off of her anger, but try to understand your daughter some more. Spend time with her. See what it is that she needs and not what she wants. And of course, you're going to need to give her some discipline and some consequences when she does have these anger outbursts. But show her that you love her no matter what. Well, we did certain things, mm-hmm. and when she came back in just 4 weeks later, she was back in school, and she was smiling. Mm. This young girl was smiling, and she said, you know, Dr. Rose, you have been so helpful to me. I feel that I can actually manage how angry I get, and I know that I can be. She wants to be a lawyer that takes care of children's causes when she grows up. So this 10-year-old now is a smiling young lady. And this is not the end of the story, obviously. If you let yourself think, oh, that's the end point. The mom has a lot of struggles. We all have a lot of struggles. But you hang in there, parents. And you're going to get a wonderful fruit in the end.
Oh, beautiful. I love the way you take your gifts that God has given you and you're making such a difference. Thank you, Dr. Rose. As always, I look forward to our conversations.
Thank you.
Have a great day. It's 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a mini break and then we'll wrap up hour one.
You don't have to look any further than today's headlines to see and understand that as a people and as a culture, we're in a mess. Families are hurting, many children are afraid, the political system is broken, and for many there is a shortage of hope. Jesus warned his followers that there would be times like this, wars, rumors of wars, earthquakes, famine, tribulation, pressure. But he also said, be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. How is that possible? Well, as most of you already know, the answer is in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The historical resurrection is the foundation of the Christian faith. Everything hangs on this reality. Faith Radio exists today to share the hope that is found in Him. Because He lives, our sins are forgiven, and the hope of eternal life is free to all who receive Him. Thank you for praying and supporting Faith Radio, as together we proclaim the love of God and the hope of eternal life for all who place their faith in a risen Savior, Jesus.
for your generous support. Because of your gifts, God is at work through the Faith Radio programs. We recently heard from one faithful listener.
I was really impacted by the sermon about the sower and the reaper and how we should have confidence in going out and sharing the gospel. It's exciting to think about, and I really appreciated that message.
Do you have a story to share about Faith Radio? We'd love to hear from you. Call our Faith Line at 877-933-2484.
Good morning, we are back. A special thanks to Owen Strand. Owen, a big Red Sox fan, getting excited about the baseball season. As am I. You know what I like about baseball? It's not an angry sport. There's so much civility in baseball. It seems that way anyway. Fights in baseball, they're rare, but they are kind of funny because it's like, what are you upset about? The ball came too close? Really? Guys throwing a rock at 100 miles an hour past your head. Few are going to go astray. But the other night I saw a fight in hockey. That was real. That was kind of scary. I don't like fights. I'm getting to the point where I cannot watch fights anymore. Football fights are kind of a joke because they have helmets on. In baseball, it's like, I don't know, don't hurt the hands. Don't hurt the hands, anything but the hands. Got to be very careful about the hands. We got a great second hour coming up. Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association is going to be with us. We've got many things to talk to him about. And also Dr. Paul Kengor, he's recently written on the gun issue and the school violence and the mass violence and a fatherless culture. We're going to talk to him in the second part of the next hour. He's a professor at Grove City College. He's an author and columnist and best-selling author. So Paul Kengor is just a great guy. And David Stevens is up next as well. That is all ahead in hour two. Drive carefully this morning, especially in the upper Midwest. It is snowy and slippery. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.